So hey there, everybody. Welcome back to another episode, edition, whatever you want to call it, of Cambridge Inside Out. My name is Robert Winters. And we were just talking about this a moment ago. We're actually going to do, it's 2 half-hour shows, but I'm just going to pause in the middle and we'll just start it up again. So just so you know. So a few things to talk about. Some having to do with the civic world. Some just have to do with Cambridge in general. One thing I basically want to do a little quick shout out right now that we, though it was snowy today, we had at least one day this past week where it was torrential rain during the night. And for me, we had rain coming in windows and rising up in my basement, which was really quite alarming, especially when it's sort of licking at the top of your hot water heater, you're worried that you're about to lose your utility. So anyway, the reason I'm mentioning it here is just to say that afterwards I contacted the folks at Public Works Department who were incredibly responsive. And that's really my point, is that TJ Shaw is the superintendent of streets and George Stelianopoulos down Public Works are really helpful. And we'll actually be meeting with people to talk about whether the drainage capacity in our local system here. In other words, it's not all about Gaza and ceasefires or whatever. Sometimes in Cambridge, we worry about things like the plumbing, you know, and whether this is climate change or just pipes, who knows? But all of my neighbors were getting inundated, and it's sort of been an adventure, to say the least. One other announcement, I think, is worth mentioning, just in case there's any of the 2023 municipal election candidates watching, which is at January 20th, which is just 4 days from now, is the deadline for filing your year-end reports with the Office of Campaign and Political Finance. And you ought to do that, because at least if they enforce their own rules, they'll charge you a fine for every day beyond that. And right now, it's Burhan Azim, Doug Brown, John Hanratty, Peter Hsu, Franz Pierre, Sumble Siddiqui, Dan Totten, what's his name, Vernon Walker, Hao Wang, and Aisha Wilson are delinquent, or not delinquent yet. They will be delinquent if they don't do it in the next 4 days. I think it's worth noting that one other person who's not going to be filing would be Greg Morey, because he passed away on Election Day. Kind of raises a bit of an issue. What actually happens when people actually have campaign accounts? I mean, right now, Greg passed away a few months ago, and the bank keeps taking fees out of his account. I'm thinking, well, shouldn't they do something about this? This doesn't seem quite right. And another thing worth mentioning is that the school committee candidates, they did file campaign finance reports 8 days before the election, but a lot of the bills are paid after that. So we're not going to really know what the full accounting for school committee elections are until they file their reports, their year-end reports, which are also due on February 20th. The city councilors have to file with the Office of Campaign Political Finance in the state. School committee candidates have to file with the Cambridge Election Commission. So there are any of the items, maybe they have, some of them have already filed, but they haven't posted any of the results yet. So, but anyway, if you're a school committee candidate, don't forget. And I mentioned one other thing in the area of political campaign, political finance, which is that when I post results, you know, about what the, you know, the actual costs are for political campaigns in Cambridge, which I hope is helpful to people, because if people are thinking about being a candidate in the future, they should at least have some kind of a ballpark estimate as to what kind of money may be involved, you know, to help them decide whether they really want to do it or not, because it is a factor. I always do everything on a complete 2-year election cycle. Some people, I think, do it in kind of a cheap way of, you know, they just start the clock in the calendar year and end it on election day. But a lot of bills are paid after election day. And it's been my practice, just somewhat arbitrarily, you have to draw the line somewhere. I start my clock on February 1st of the year before the election, and ended on January 31st of the year, right after the election. So it's a full 2-year cycle. So if anybody wants to argue with me about my practices, please feel free to do so. But I think that really, since people are raising money, you know, some candidates at least raise money during the years where there's not an election, because you can have, you know, limits of $1,000 a year. And you can, if you get one every year, you can get $2,000 out of somebody during one election cycle. So anyway, the only correct way in my view is to actually do it as a full 2-year measure, which is what I do. So enough on that. I'll actually maybe talk about a little bit about election related stuff later. What I wanted to just alert everybody to is that, you know, we now do have a fully inaugurated city council for the years 2024 and 2025 with Mayor Simmons in charge. That's city council end of things. And the school committee is fully inaugurated now. There were two who had not been inaugurated at the original meeting, but that's been corrected now. So anyway, so things are underway. There are some of the more important things that actually happen in the early part of a city council term, as well as beginning of a school committee term, is whether the school committee chooses to divide itself up into subcommittees, which it almost always does. They need members and they need chairs. And certainly at the city council side, the same is true. The vice chair, who this time around will be Carolyn Hunter for the school committee, they elected her vice chair. But on the city council side, it's Mayor Simmons. And Mayor Simmons will be, I mean, she is, I'm sure she's still very involved in deciding who the, what the appointments will be to the various city council committees and who the chairs will be. You know, typically, you get the announcement a week or two after the mayor is elected. So since there was no city council meeting because of Martin Luther King Day yesterday, the next regular meeting will be on January 22nd. And I anticipate we'll get the listing either then or maybe even before then. Sometimes they're actually, it will show up in the council packet, which will appear Thursday night. We'll see who it is. So, I get a little bit of prior knowledge, you know, because I'm all connected, I suppose, but I only know of two people who will be chairing committees, and I'm not going to tell you who they are. But, you know, it'll be interesting. I mean, I think there were some fundamental errors made in the last council term, certainly in terms of the Public Safety Committee. And I think there are some really important decisions that have to be made in terms of transportation. With a lot of the controversies having to do with you know, bicycle infrastructure, but also, you know, public transit, bus lanes, automotive traffic. You know, there's a lot to talk about in the transportation end of things. And also the government operations, which I don't know for sure what the process will be, but one of the biggest things our city council will be taking up very relatively early on in this term will be the question about what to do with the recommendations from the Charter Review Committee. Now, the Charter Review Committee was supposed to finish their job in December, but asked for an extra month. And they will be meeting on Tuesday, January 23rd for one last meeting to finalize the recommendations in the report. So they're drafting now. And they'll basically sign off on it a week from today. And then it goes to the city council. So the presumption is it'll be forwarded to their, or it goes to the full city council, who then have to, what they typically you would expect to do, except that this process has never happened before. They could simply initially send it to the Government Operations Committee, which would seem to be the logical place for such a thing. But how they handle this, whether they do it with a 5-person subcommittee to do the initial hashing out of things, or if they decide to do some kind of an arrangement with a full city council, well, you know, time will tell. So anyway, be on the lookout for that. I think it's a pretty important thing. So now At the last meeting, which was on January 8th, I was actually hoping, actually, I was hoping in December that what the departing city council would do was basically just to allow all business items that had not been acted on or things that were awaiting report from the city manager to just expire and then just start fresh with a clean slate. And I was encouraged by the remarks of our freshly minted Mayor Simmons on January 1st, who made reference to starting off with a clean slate. I thought, well, wouldn't that be a nice thing to do? So what happened, which I actually found interesting, and maybe some of you will not find so interesting, I don't know, was that the city manager came back with a communication to the city council on at the January 8th meeting, asking if they could take a different look about how all these items that have been awaiting report, some of which have been there on there for 5 years or more, and you know, one, I suppose one way to adjudicate things is for the manager to send a perfunctory response to the council saying, sorry, I'm not going to do this now, but get back to me later. Or they could act on things. So what he has to do is then to sort of reevaluate things and to think about their whole process of, you know, basically throwing work at city staff, more work than they can reasonably be expected to complete. You know, I always call them drive-by orders. They're just sort of like, hey, I'm a city councilor. I have an idea. Here, why don't you do that? And then eight other councilors say, sure. I have no problem asking the manager just to report back. But in fact, every time you do that, that's staff time. And there's also the issue of, well, if something really is unreasonable, you're sort of putting the manager in the position of basically challenging you back. And anyway, so what happened during the discussion of that item on January 8th was Paul Toner, I thought rather nicely, made a motion to simply take every item that was awaiting report and place it on file. And that's placing on file doesn't mean, you know, Davy Jones' locker. It means placed on file. The manager is not obligated to be responding to it right now, but you, any city council, any, well, by majority vote, could request that something be pulled back out of that that mythical file, and then you know, put back for, you know, trying to facilitate some action by the city manager. So there are some good ideas that were, you know, included in this rather long list of matters awaiting report. But so Paul Toner made the motion. It passed on a 5-4 vote with Councilors Azeem McGovern, Joan Pickett, Paul Toner, and Denise Simmons saying, yeah, place it on file. Let's work with the manager on this. And then Patty Nolan, Sumbul Siddiqui, Jeevan Sabrina Wheeler, and Aisha Wilson voted no, wanted to leave the items or at least refer them to some government operations to decide in advance which ones to keep. So, but I thought actually what they chose to do was the right thing to do. So that right now, when the city council agenda comes out, it really will look like a fresh start. And I think that's a good philosophy for a new council, especially with a turnover of three people departing the council. I mean, there were some things awaiting report going back to the days before, you know, before their councilors who haven't been on the council in 4 years, and they were still waiting a report. It was kind of ridiculous. Anyway, I thought that was a good thing. You know, even though it was a close vote. Another matter that was on the agenda for, in a variety of ways, for the January 8th meeting was, had to do with Jerry's Pond up in North Cambridge on Ridge, you know, adjacent to Ridge Avenue. Now, you know, there's been a lot of going back, a lot of advocacy in favor of doing something. There have been some really delightful plans proposed by some of the groups up there. Eric Grunbaum in particular is somebody I know who's really been shepherding this process along and trying to work with, I think it's an IQHQ, IHQ, whatever it is, a four-letter acronym for the owner of the property that, because Jerry's Pond is actually privately owned. There was a history of some pollutants in and around the area. But there are a lot of delicate matters about disturbing of soils, and if you want to fill a part of Jerry's Pond in order to widen the roadway, in order to put in a bicycle structure, you have to then compensate for that by excavating questionable soils. Anyway, much as I like the plans, the city council was faced with a vote right at their first regular business meeting to do something, and there was a basically the motion was to let the current plan, which the property owner developers bringing before the Conservation Commission to act on, to let that proceed without some of the add-ons that the advocates wanted. Now, again, I don't want to make any enemies by saying this, but I'm going to say it anyway, which is that I thought the city council did exactly the right vote, even though it was a 5-4 vote, basically to just allow things to proceed as it is right now, even if that was a bit of a disappointment to some of the city councilors and some of the advocates. And in fact, it was followed by a local media letter from, I think, Aisha Wilson and a few others trying to recast the question of Jerry's Pond as an environmental justice issue. I don't personally buy that argument. I think of that as more as a tactic than as a legitimate argument. But I'll just say, in my opinion, even though I'm sure Eric would be disappointed, I thought it was the right vote to just let things go and to not kind of force the issue and just do that. I thought that the city manager, and actually not so much the city manager, but our deputy city manager, Owen O'Riordan, and Kathy Watkins from the Department of Public Works really, really made a strong case as to why the additional disturbance was not really the right thing to do at this time. So anyway, so those are the two largest business items that were on that agenda, and I thought the city council handled both of them rather well. So this bodes well for a good term, I hope. Now, on the other hand, there was a problem at the city council inauguration on January 1st, where a bunch of protesters protesting matters that have nothing to do with the city of Cambridge, nothing to do with anything on the agenda, nothing to do with the inauguration, but they decided to use the venue of the city council inauguration to force issues having to do with such matters as the situation that is happening right now in Gaza and Israel. They also brought in, rehashed some of the issues about their unhappiness with Elbit systems operating out of a building on Bishop Allen Drive. They even brought in the police-involved shooting of Arif Faisal. All of these things were sort of put on display as part of a demonstration. And I thought, okay, you've had your 15 minutes of fame, move on, and let's get down to business. But sure enough, on February 8th, at our regular meeting, many of those same people kind of quietly filtered into the gallery at City Hall during the public comment. And even though there was not a single matter on the agenda having anything to do with any of the matters that they wanted to talk about, and even though the City Council rules are explicit about the fact that you may only make public comment about matters that are on the City Council agenda. And in fact, on particular parts of the City Council agenda, not everything. You can't just send in your own communication and then talk about it, for example. So they busted up the meeting again and lingered in City Hall. The city councilors, it's not a good look that when they run away and they reconvene in Zoom. But on the other hand, they didn't really have much choice unless they wanted to actually start making arrests. I think there comes a point where that is what you should start doing, in my opinion. But we have a little problem right now because these same characters have now promised to come back at every single meeting. They've promised to occupy City Hall and make life difficult for all of the elected officials until they basically get our local Cambridge City Council to somehow get themselves very involved in international relations, which is ridiculous. So one, and as was the case with the Faisal matter last year and others, it's a never-ending presence of a group called the Party for Socialism and Liberation. What socialism has to do with any of this is quite beyond me. There's one particular individual named Suhail Perkar, I believe is how his name is pronounced, who is an ever-present person at all of these, and was sort of leading the chants outside the Sullivan Chamber after the counselors had actually gone and reconvened in Zoom. The thing I want to point out about this, and I think this is a matter of some significance, is that he lives in Somerville. And many, if not most, of the people who were busting up a Cambridge City Council meeting live in places like Somerville and elsewhere. Yes, there were a few Cambridge residents who I'm sure were well instructed to make clear their residency here to give some legitimacy. But honestly, if you really think about this and sort of take it to its ultimate extent, and actually look back at some of the events that happened this past year when we were doing a lot of things with public comment in Zoom, including there was some controversy over Hewlett-Packard and the fact that there was some city might be doing contract with a company that did business with Israel, or which provided software or something it was used in Israel. So there were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people would sign up to make public comment about this. There were many, many, many people signed up to make public comment remotely, having to do with this matter. It wasn't even on the agenda of either the inauguration or the February 8th meeting. One of the things that the City Council generally does at the beginning of every term is it provisionally accepts its rules. So right now we're in that provisional period where presumably the government operations can now go back and review its rules. And I'm going to make a suggestion here, which is that we're going to have to do something about this, because if not, regular Cambridge residents and citizens who actually have legitimate reasons to be making public comment about matters that are on the City Council agenda are basically going to be squelched by a bunch of people who are coming from here, there, and everywhere, or at best being allowed up to maybe at most 1 minute to make a comment because there are hundreds of other characters dialing in from Michigan or California or Somerville in order to express their point of view about a matter that has nothing to do with Cambridge. If the City Council can't change some rules in order to fix this, then I think they're going to have a terrible term. And I really think this is a matter they're going to have to do really, really soon. One simple change I would make, or at least suggest that they consider, is that right now the City Council rules, I mean, I'll actually sort of point out where they are here right now. The rules regarding public comment pretty much allow any individual or employee of the city to, speak at a city council meeting. Now, these things, even though they were amended, these rules were amended. I'm not going to stick with that here, just sort of just flash it by there. But they were amended during the term, this past term, when there was a lot of remote public comment being made. But I really think that's going to have to be revised. For example, instead of saying any individual, I would change it personally to any Cambridge resident or employee of the City of Cambridge or anyone who has business on the agenda. So, for example, if you were not a Cambridge resident, but you own property in Cambridge and it was something on the, you were seeking a permit or something like that, then that would be appropriate. And then to simply give the mayor the discretion to allow others to speak if the mayor feels that is warranted. I would also make a rule change to require people can, you can argue this out with the lawyers and, and constitutional people, but I would require everybody to give real names and their real addresses so that they can decide whether the person has a legitimate right to speak in front of Cambridge City Council. Free speech is great, except for the fact that, except when there are hundreds and hundreds of people basically clogging up the arteries of democracy, which in turn makes it impossible for people who have a legitimate need to make public comment to actually make that comment, right? I think if you had something of significance and you were expecting 3 minutes to make your comment, which is a very reasonable amount of time, and then you're being chopped down to 60 seconds or less, so that they can accommodate this political theater, I think that's a problem. So I think it's about time that the our Cambridge City Council actually considered doing something about this, because if they don't, they're just going to be recessing their meetings every single week, and picking it up in Zoom. And I think that, I mean, people would say, well, the people are going to continue to show up and chant and chant and chant. Well, there may very well come a point where you have to actually bring in law enforcement and actually restrict access to the Sullivan Chamber if, in fact, things continue to go in the direction that they've been going. So anyway, I hope that they, our city council can actually have the, this, the willpower to do that, because, it's not beyond the realm of possibility that you could have a national organization decide that City of Cambridge is a wonderful venue to sort of highlight some international matter, and then through the use of social media and remote public comment, you could have not 100 or 200, you could get 1,000 or 2,000 or 20,000 people signing up to make public comment. Again, I hate to sort of take it to the sort of the reductio ad absurdum point of view here, but the point is that that's a possibility. And if your rules aren't written in such a way as to be able to handle a possibility like that, then your rules need to be modified. So please do something, because it's going to be terrible if you do not. So, all right. Now we got 57 minutes for the show here, but I'm going to momentarily just take a little bit of a break here, and then I'll just sort of formally sign off and sign back in. But then, so anyway, so I'll be back in a flash, literally, on Cambridge Inside Out.